It's Carl Beston, and welcome to a monumental grand final episode of the Beston and Greenway NBL podcast. Here to celebrate this momentous occasion, I brought back a much loved and requested guest of the pod. Here he is, the tyrant of the totals, the oppressor of the odds, the supreme leader of picks, Kim from Kim's Picks on Twitter. Welcome back, my brother.
Oh man, I gotta say that is the best introduction I think I will ever have in my entire lifetime. So it is great to be back on here, and quite the exciting time. We've got a lot to cover here, and I'm looking forward to getting into it.
Man, what did you speaking of that, just as a general like macro view over the semifinals, what were your thoughts?
Well, I mean, the first thoughts that come to mind are definitely wow that Tasmania was able to pull that off. Those were games I expected to be tough, gritty, grindy, low-scoring games, but I didn't think the Jack Jumpers would quite have it in them to take down United on their home floor. So very impressive games there. And even with the Hawks-Kings games, there were some great games to watch. Just some really high-level basketball overall, honestly.
Yeah. I thought the Sydney and Illawarra series, I thought like Illawarra shouldn't really be hanging their heads in shame with that game. I actually thought they played pretty well, to be honest, in both. It was just lapses against what was a great Kings team. And you're going to have lapses in games, and the Kings obviously punish you every time you do that with the deadly lineup that they have. But I guess we should start with the United and Tasmania series. I predicted that Melbourne would win in three, and I thought that was being like generous to the Jack Jumpers, but the Jack Jumpers get through. Did you ever think it was a remote possibility?
Honestly, I really didn't. You know, I mean, we talked about United, you know, they're obviously a great team and not quite having that star player as you've mentioned, but I still thought they had plenty enough to get by the Jack Jumpers. So I agree. It didn't shock me that the Jack Jumpers were able to get one, but I definitely didn't think that they would be able to get two and steal the series. So at this point, you just got to bow your head and just be impressed, because, I mean, they earned it. You know, that's wasn't luck. It wasn't anything like that. They just, the way they played, the way they're coached, the way their team chemistry is, it was very impressive series to watch, and how they were able to take down the giant Melbourne United.
Man, people laughed at me all year. They criticized me. I had Melbourne United fans coming after me on Twitter every week when I said, this Melbourne United roster isn't that good. It just simply isn't that good. And I never bought them. Towards the end of the season, I go, you know what? Like, once you get in the finals, anything can happen, right? You can win. But I never really bought this team as a title contender on paper. It just didn't make sense that this team could stand up with, say, a Sydney Kings. I had Perth in that conversation as well with Vic Law in the lineup, but I just didn't see how this Melbourne United team had the personnel to get it done. They needed a scorer who could create their own shot. And the fact that they kind of thought that they could win with this, you know, like this, how would you say, a team of role players situation that, you know, and they had some delusional beliefs that some of these guys were stars, was beyond me. They needed an extra guy that they could go to in a crucial situation and get them a score. And they just didn't have it, right? And if you watched on Monday night especially, but during the whole series, right? So Scott Roth was just throwing a double at Joe Lualakeel every time he was on the block. Like down low, if he was in the paint or on the paint on the block, they were throwing the double and getting the ball out of his hands, right? And the thing about JLA is, you know, he's not a willing passer down there. It's not his, you know, like he's not a passing big man. It's always, he's improved in that regard compared to what he was last year, you know, in the year, you know, he has improved, but he's not a passing big man. And Roth was like, well, let's make him find passes, pick lanes, and make decisions in that spot. And it didn't work, right? Scott Roth also did an extremely hard show on all on balls and then relied on secondary rotations after that. And then he dared them to shoot in those situations off of non-shooters. So he helped off United non-shooters during that all, you know, pretty the whole series, right? And he goes, you know what? If you want to beat me with Jack White shooting a triple, you want to beat me with Bubba shooting a triple, Deli shooting a triple, sure. Like, I'll just tip my hat and I'll say, you know what? well played, guys, you beat me. But they were not going to allow Melbourne just to use their bread and butter. Don't get me wrong. Goulding plays on Monday. Melbourne win, right? I get all that and I understand that. But you have to look at the, because you look at the total series from three, what, Melbourne in game three was 6 for 29. Game two, they were 6 for 34. And in game one, they were 5 for 25, right? There was just no perimeter shooting for United. There was no one that they could throw the ball to and get a score in those situations. What was your take?
Well, yeah, I mean, you mentioned a bunch of it. I mean, the three-point shooting was just atrocious for Melbourne United. Mm. I mean, they could have easily ran away with the series without a doubt if they could shoot the three ball, but they just didn't have the pieces around them this year. Even Goulding has been a little bit disappointed in some of these games, not shooting the ball well. And the other guys, like you mentioned, I mean, just they're not consistent. Jack White, not a consistent shooter. You won't get it with Udai Baba. And it makes it hard. You know, I mean, give Mason Peatley in any minutes, it's the same thing. He's not going to shoot the ball. He's just out there kind of wasting space, if we're being honest. But that's, I mean, if you look going into the series, the main mismatch was going to be Joe Alachul against Tasmania, especially without Will Magne. That was the way United could really pound it in and dominate the series. And I think that's what Scott Roth noticed, was that's what needs to be fixed, is if they're going to beat us, make them hit their threes. And Bubba and the other guys were able to make their threes, and they would have won the series easily, but they simply weren't going to let Alachul dominate that series in the paint when they know they lack the size they needed to stop him. So credit to Scott Roth, he made the right decision to make him beat him on the three-point line, and obviously United wasn't able to.
No, and Melbourne smashed Tasmania in game one on the O-glass as well, which was a huge deal, and that's what really turned the game for my thought in game. Like, game one was a slow and ugly game as well, but Melbourne got those extra possessions off the O-glass. And then this time, you know, Tasmania cleaned that up a bit in game two. They still got beaten right in game two, which is fair enough. Like, they're an undersized team, right? They've got Fabian Krizlovic, who's like my high, playing the center, right? Like, it is an undersized team with like a 6'7", 6'8" center, right? So you're going to give it up. And then they actually won the O-board battle in game three. Another thing that I thought Tasmania, they've done this very well all year, where they just try and get you, they try and get you in the mud, right? They try and get you into this like half court grit and grind game. And when they reduce them, they have the slowest pace in the NBL. So they try and reduce the amount of possessions that are in a basketball game to make up for, let's be honest, their relative lack of talent. And they go, you know what? We'll break you down. We'll beat you with our system. And they slowed the pace to a crawl. There's even funny parts, like even when Melbourne's inbounding the ball, the guy scored, you know, you quickly jump back there to prevent the quick kick out from the baseline as well. Like, it's just the little things that I think Tasmania paid attention to, and I think they did a great job, right?
Absolutely. No, they definitely had a well-executed game plan going in against United, and United's very, very good team in transition. We all know that. And so their main goal was to make them earn every basket in a half-court set. Because if you can get United to do that, that matchup with Tasmania against United becomes a little more of an even matchup than it was. So they had a very well-executed game plan in that part, making them shoot threes, contested threes, not letting them have anything in the paint, take that transition away. Most certainly that's really what made the difference in the series, was turning this into a half-court game and slowing the pace down. And as you mentioned, Tasmania, they'll make it grit, muddy, gross, especially in Tasmania. Man, it's just... it's tough to play your own game there. When you're playing up in Tasmania, you're going to play Tasmania's game most of the time, because they just play to those fans so well, and you can see why United struggled there and couldn't get the win there in Tassie.
Yeah, and the other big thing is too that Tasmania had the guy that could sort of take the game by the throat and win it in Josh Adams. Melbourne just didn't have a guy like that that they could just throw the ball to create a shot. Don't get me wrong, like that last... that last double clutch three fading right from the corner was one of the biggest, like, no, 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 yes, yes, yes shots if you're on that Tasmanian bench. Like, it was a, like, what Paul George said about that Damian Lillard three, whatever, from whatever, 7 foot, 8 foot behind the 3-point line. That's a bad shot, right? So, like, if I'm in that Melbourne United post-game press conference, I go, that's a bad shot. Like, you would live, and he shot it with like 11 seconds left on the shot clock in a game when they're trying to like use clock down the stretch. And you're like, shit, what the hell was that? And then it went in. And you just like, and that was the game, right? And yeah, as much as I kind of mocked that shot a little bit, it, you know, it's a historic NBL shot, but it is hilarious that, you know, like Tasmania, a team that tries to do everything so with such discipline and such order, that that was the big shot that won the game, was a double clutch fading right with 10 seconds on the shot clock three from Josh Adams, right?
Absolutely. It's funny because he's the one guy that's going to get away with that. Because he's probably the one guy on the team that is actually capable of hitting that shot.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's simple as big time players make those big time plays and big time moments. And that's what you saw there with Josh Adams. That's the guy that United lacked. You know, obviously, sure, it's a bad shot. It's a very low percentage shot. But and it comes down into the crunch time. He'll make that more than a lot of other players in the league just because he's one of those big time players. So it's a bad shot for everyone but him, pretty much.
Yeah, correct. You don't get a gig in the Euro League if you can't play, right? Like, the guy's got a resume on him. He can ball, right? And the other thing I will say about Tasmania, too, is that Jack McVay won the matchup of the Jacks as well, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, that was another. I didn't really think about the matchup of the Jacks. Jack White, Jack McVay. Two guys that kind of similar in their playing, play very hard, go on the offensive glass, play hard defense. But McVay's just all year. I mean, he's done this all year. He's been very impressive. Yeah. He's been shooting the ball well, but just being there defensively, being a leader for the team. I mean, he's been a huge, huge addition for Tasmania, and without a doubt won the battle of the Jacks for sure.
Yeah, that's a, like, because this is the thing, was that Melbourne, they had to win at the 4 and 5 spot, I felt, in this series. Because I thought Josh Adams and Goulding, like that, Goulding, it's funny, like, I get criticism on this pod for saying Goulding instead of Goulding, right? And it's kind of like he's always, like, all the way going back to the Siebel days, like, you know, everyone knows him as kind of Goulding. Even Leonard Copeland, who I think was even still playing in the Siebel at that time, but was definitely, you know, coaching post that, calls him Goulding on the broadcast. Now I get these phone, these messages going, call him Goulding. And it's like, yeah, it's hard to break out of old habits from when you're sitting in a locker room and your coach is yelling at you because he's scored 40, you know, scored 40 after the game, you know. It's hard to get that out of your head, guys. So my apologies for calling him Goulding instead of Goulding again. But though it's a, I just think that matchup was sort of pretty, like, both those guys can go ballistic. I get it. Josh Adams is more of a shot creator, but Chris Goulding's a better shooter. And, like, I don't think you'll find a better scorer, in the Aussie scorer in the league than him, pure scorer. But you looked around the rest of the floor and I go, well, I don't really see United advantage apart from at the center, there was a definitive advantage. And you'd hope that Jack White would be able to hold his own against McVay. He just wasn't, right? And JLA just didn't put up, he played okay, but he just didn't put up the monster numbers that were needed, right?
Absolutely right. He just couldn't quite pull up those monster numbers they needed. They honestly really needed him to carry a lot, especially when they, in game three there, when they didn't have Goulding. However you pronounce Goulding, whatever. I'll blame it on my American accent for that.
Yeah, but yeah, you're fine. I'll be the one who gets criticized.
But, I mean, yeah, they needed him to absolutely dominate because the rest of the guys around him, you know, are solid, but it's just not enough. And the way Tasmania is going to play, he needed to do a little more. You know, obviously, like you mentioned, he played good. Not saying he played bad, but they needed sort of some Jock Landale-ish stuff. I always bring up the Jock Landale comparisons because I love that guy. But he needed to absolutely take over the game. And you just didn't quite see that enough from him, especially on the offensive glass. Would love to see more when he's going in such an undersized team. But credit to Tasmania. I think they just had him flustered, and he really had to earn every bucket he got. So it was tough sledding down there for him. Now he wasn't able to do enough for him.
And the other thing I will say too is that Jock had an ability to pass out of the post much better than JLA, which I think showed up significantly in this series. So if Jock saw the double, he could pick the lane to pass out of, and then it often, like, it wouldn't be to Chris, but then they'd create a secondary rotation which led to another rotation which led to a shooter, right? And I do think, like, everyone kind of mocked Scotty Hobson last year as well, like, but Melbourne could have used Scotty Hobson on Monday night, right?
They could have used another guy that can create his own shot, consistent shooter, definitely. There were definitely flashes last year that Scotty Hobson, it was definitely some games that you could easily mock him for sure, but I mean, if you look at it this year, you know, I think he's what they were hoping Caleb Agata would be. Mm. And Agata just wasn't that Scotty Hobson they needed. He wasn't consistent enough to be that sort of player. Shaley's a fine player too. Great defender, but same thing, just not consistent enough scoring. So they definitely needed another guy that, you know, it's one thing you got to give Scotty credit is he was the guy that could go and get a bucket when they needed it to. And that's just really the only guy they had was Joe Lou Alachua, but with all the doubles, they didn't have anyone else to go to that role. So it made it tough for them not having Scotty for sure.
Yeah, and I know JLA shot the ball relatively well from three during the season too, but in the pick and pop, he just didn't, like, it didn't seem great in this series either. I haven't checked the numbers on his three-point shooting, but it just didn't, they didn't look effective in pick and pop situations either. It just wasn't. Yeah, so he only attempted 1-3 in game three. Sorry, that's at my state, sorry. He only attempted one in Tasmania. I'll just check what he did back in Melbourne in game three on Monday. I remember him hitting one at the start. Two attempts, 2 for 2, right? I just didn't understand why there were no more attempts, why the pick and pop wasn't used more with JLA. It was just a weird... I'm a big Dean Vickerman. I think Dean's done an amazing job this year. I was disappointed in his lack of a plan for game three. It was just much more of the same. Like, he didn't really come up with a solution for the hard show, the Tasmania's hard show in the high on ball, right? And it just didn't make a lot of, like, it just, the approach to it, the no adjustment didn't make a lot of sense. I know you believe in your guys and you're the number one seed for a reason and you let the other team play to your terms, but I think they need to make some adjustments there. And whether even in his substitution rotations as well, if you're down a shooter in Chris Golding, if they're going to be running that hard show early and then getting the ball out of hands and helping off non-shooters, you kind of got to put in big-time shooting lineups. And I know Dave Barlow hasn't had the best year. He's getting on in time and all that, but maybe that was a wrinkle they could have thrown in. At least the guy's a consistent spot-up shooter from three. Like, they just had no shooting, Kim. Like, they just had none, man. Like, it was really, really hard to watch because you've been relying largely on, you know, Golding all year for that, and you got to hope that Agata's on a good day, right?
Right. That's just what made it tough. I mean, I'm with you there. I know... I'm actually a big David Barlow fan. I've sort of unconventional shot, but he's a very good shooter. I do like watching him get some more minutes. He's definitely right. He's getting older in age. But they really, I mean, even all he's got to do is stand in the corner so they can't just double a chew the whole time. And I trust him to hit 4 out of 10 shots. I mean, he should honestly be shooting a good amount. He should be getting a lot of open shots. And I think he should have played a little more minutes. I know they like having Baba in, a little younger, quicker, better defender.
And they like Jack White and Pete Ling at the foot. Because he can play. He's actually a very good post defender, Dave Barlow, funnily enough. Like, he's very strong on the block. I mean, the guy's a fitness trainer by trade, right? The guy is strong as an ox. He can guard anyone on the block. And tell me he can't guard Fabian Krizlovich. Let alone, he could guard Jack McVay, let alone Krizlovich or McIntosh as well. Like, he's got the mobility to guard those guys, right?
Absolutely. No, there's definitely some guys in there. I mean, put them on Sam McDaniel. I mean, some other guys that they're fine players but aren't really huge scorers. There's plenty of people that he could have guarded, in my opinion. Yep. If Bairstow or Jared Weeks is getting minutes, I mean, that already right there, same thing. Just send him on there. So I agree. I've a little disappointing in something that Vickerman's usually really good at, and that's making adjustments, especially in series adjustments. And they just didn't seem to be there. It sort of just let Tazzy push at him and push at him, push at him until they beat him, especially game three on the home floor. I mean, that's tough for Vickerman to lose there. It's not a good look for sure. Obviously, credit to Tasmania, but you would have hoped there'd be some more adjustments. I actually just pulled up the roster from last year with United. And you can just see the obvious holes this season from last season. I mean, last season, they had Mitch McCarron as well. So they had McCarron and Scotty Hobson, two guys that could make a play, especially in big-time moments. And that's just what they lacked this year.
With Landell.
And that's with, exactly, that's with Landell and, a better Joe Lou Alachua. So there's just a lot of pieces missing.
Yeah, and everyone refused to see it all year. I argued with people till I was blue in the face all year about how this team, I just didn't see how it could win. And I'm from Melbourne, right? I live in Melbourne. United's always classically been my team, but I looked at the team this year and I go, I liked it. I liked the, I liked the personalities on the team. I liked the organization, but I just go, this isn't a winning group. Like, it's just not. They needed, and especially when you had two imports. The thing is, right, I get with the salary cap that you're better off spending, like, so here in Australia, I'm not sure how you're familiar with the, how the salary cap works. If you put in Australian, if you marquee Australian players, you can essentially pay them what you want and they're limited. You know, it's essentially a, I don't know the precise rate now, but it's like a, you know, you only get allocated, it's a, it counts a reduced amount towards your cap. So like, say for example, you pay 700 grand or $1 million for Delhi, whatever it is, he'll only count like 250. That might've gone up to 300 or 350, but relative right. to what you're actually, like if you pay for Australians, it only counts for a certain amount towards the cap, I think for three guys. And it's like why Perth are in a bit of a salary cap mess now is because they expected Cotton to get citizenship. And therefore they went an exorbitant figure on him. And then they go, oh no, like he hasn't been given citizenship. Therefore we're over and we're paying dollar for dollar tax. So it's, you know, this is, I get why they went down the path they did, because you can go, well, it, you know, salary cap wise, it works out a lot better. But there are guys on the global market who will play for cheap and will give you some, they don't have to be necessarily, like they, there are guys looking for gigs out there where they can showcase themselves, especially in the NBL. So it was a bit strange, in my opinion. I think they could have done it mid-season as well. Like they could have found a way to work a guy in. It was, that's why I remember messaging at the time. Remember, I'm like, this Bubba signing, what the hell is this? They've already got Bubba and like three other guys.
Absolutely, yeah. They already kind of do have Bubba and Shaley.
Like, what's Shaley? You know, what's Caleb Agata? You know, it's a, and even Delhi to some extent is the perimeter defender, right? Like, what are we doing there?
Right. No, I mean, even if they got a guy that can't make his own, you know, playmake for himself, but is a really good three shooter, even that would have been huge. Just having him out there so they couldn't have the double team. I mean, that's like you were saying, playing more David Barlow. I mean,
and people laugh at us for the Barlow suggestion, right? People will laugh at us going, he's old, he's slow and all that. Look at the pace the game was played at, guys. It was like they were walking, as I said, it was like they were walking through quicksand on Monday night. The game was that slow.
Definitely. And even if he was on limited minutes, he could have made a big addition, even somewhat limited. But I think he should have gotten, you know, way more. I didn't see him in very much at all in the series. And he would have been a huge, huge addition, especially, I mean, if you look at the first two games, that's why I'm kind of stunned Vickerman didn't make a move. Mm. I mean, just the first two games alone, they shot 20% from three in the first game, 5 for 25. And then pulling up the second game, they shot 17% from three, 6 for 34. I mean, atrocious levels.
And game one, where they won, they shot 5 for 25. So they shot at 20%.
That's just why I couldn't believe he didn't make the change. I mean, all you got to do is shoot 20% if you could win this. Yep. But it's like,
and man, even I mean, have a guy out there. Barlow doesn't even have to shoot it, but you have to guard him. Right? Like, so Barlow doesn't even need those shots, but it will spread the floor and mean it can't be a rotation off of him.
Absolutely, and that's why I'm kind of with you on that. He should have gotten more minutes. I'm really stunned he didn't. I mean, the other guys just aren't going to be. I mean, the Bubbas of the world, great defender and all, good player, but you know him and Illy and Jack White are just, they're not going to be consistent 3-point shooters. I mean, same with Mason Peatling. I'm really not a big fan of Mason Peatling on the basketball court. I just feel like he's out there sort of wasting space because he can't shoot. I mean, he's just kind of running around. In my opinion, I don't see why you don't give those minutes to David Barlow. I mean, I think they'd be better off having him out there because he can spread the floor and make those doubles a lot harder.
Yeah, to so me.
Just stunned me.
And especially, like, I had a Melbourne United fan message me in desperate, like, just exasperated on, just in absolute desperation on Monday night going, oh, my God, Carl. They've got on the floor at the same time Shai Ili, Delhi, Agata, and Jack White. And he goes, how are they supposed to hit a shot?
Oh, man. It's just it. I mean, Tasmania could, you know, keep all five inside the paint. Let them shoot. I mean, it's basically that bad. It's God is not consistent enough. Illy's not consistent enough. Jack White's not.
No.
I mean, all these guys are players that would have great roles on so many teams, but they definitely cannot be on the floor at the same time. There's just no reasoning for it. So,
and it was really hard. It was hard to watch United. In those droughts, like it was like you're like, how are they going to find a score apart from barreling to the ring and hopefully getting to the foul line?
Right. That's what it came down to is, you know, Tasmania can simply just stack the paint because the guys on the floor are not going to be good enough shooters. And it's like you're saying, where's the offense going to come from when you're going against a team that's just going to pack the paint and not have to worry about any shooters? And so the lineups are definitely in question. I think that's something Vierkamin easily should have been able to play around with more. I guess it's easy in hindsight sort of say it, but they had the first two games to see this, that they are struggling major to shoot the three ball. You think they would make some changes, but they just simply couldn't. And like you mentioned, I think, you know, these changes were something they should have seen earlier in the season and made a change there, because three-point shooting killed them in the playoffs there. I mean, it's simply if they had, you know, three-point shooting more consistent, Golden shoot a little better, other guys shoot a little better, they would have won the series, no doubt.
Oh, yeah, and this is why the point I'll make is, you know, United fans are going, you're just shit-canning my team. I understand that if Golden played that game, they win, right? I get that, right? But he didn't play, and this is still a one seed at home in a game three. It's so hard for road teams to win game threes. And Melbourne had wide-open look after wide-open look. And I'm not even going to talk about the foul shooting. The foul shooting was like around 50% as well. It was just bad. Like, you know, that was one they let slip. I understand they were rostered. Yeah, 11 for 21 from the foul line.
I'm looking at it right now. It's awful, especially in that one game they shot 50-something percent and the Jack Jumpers were 13 for 14. I mean, you're leaving way too many points.
You're leaving points, yep. Especially because, you know, like at home, in a home game three, I tweeted about it mockingly, right, about like the Melbourne United jersey, these new Melbourne United jerseys of fire, you know, with the refs uniforms, right? But in game three, you're going to get those calls, right? Like that's just the way, if you're the home team in a deciding game, that's what you play all year for, is there's going to be crowd pressure. It's not a knock on the refs. It's not any of these things. It is a little bit of a humorous knock on the refs, but it's naturally what is going to happen in any league around the world, whether it's game seven in the NBA, whether it's whether it's in a Euro League series, it is going to happen. You are going to get those calls at home because the pressure is on, and that's what you play all year for, right? And Melbourne just didn't take advantage of that either.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they have guys to do it too, guys that should be able to get into the paint and really create some havoc there and really put the pressure on those officials to make those calls, especially in the big time moments, the last 2 minutes. You don't want to be the official that missed an obvious call there that cost a team the game. And United really wasn't able to do that. But beyond that, they weren't making the free throws when they were getting the opportunity. I mean, they can make them make the call all they want, but you shoot 52% from the free throw line, it really isn't going to hurt the Jack Jumpers. So it was just a lot of levels of disappointment for United. But really, it just comes down to it. This just wasn't the right lineup this year, and
no,
it's just not their year. That's really what it is.
That's the thing.
They're just not good enough.
We'll move on from. But from a betting perspective, how'd you find the series? You played the totals unders pretty much consistently, right?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, that was a no-brainer for me. My concern was, you know, how would United's pace be, being that they do like to play fast pace and can get up and score. But I thought Tasmania's defense was so solid that it would be hard for them to do that. And the totals slowly went down more and more each game. You know, the books were setting them at, but I took the under in all three. It should never have been in the 160s. You know, you got the Jack Jumpers. They're not going to score 80 points in a game against United. That was without a doubt. And really the only concern was if United got into the high 80s, 90s, and they never came close with Tasmania's defense. So it was, as you expect, you know, it's a grind in the mud, hard defense, very physical series. And that's what you got on the scoreboard there with a lot of easy unders.
And ironically, I haven't bet a total all year, right? Like I'm not a totals guy. I'm largely a money line. I'll just pick my winners and move on, thanks. Which is stupid given that the handicap line's generally pretty good. Like, you know, I think we did it, Seb and I did it last year, and we both wound up we did it for every game and both wound up in the mid-20s plus units. But this total I looked at, and I actually took Tasmania under 76.5. which I thought was funny because I'm like, oh, I'm not going to play the Melbourne United aspect of it because I did this before Golding was announced out. I'm like, I'm not touching the Melbourne United side of the total because, you know, the game could get out of control late, home team run up the score, it's over. But I go, I just don't see Tasmania scoring 77 on the road in a game three situation. This team's not that great a scoring team. And then it took like Josh Adams to miss that free throw for it to come through, right? Like, so yeah, got a little bit lucky there. But no, the total was seemed like the play every game in this series. And, you know, it was always going to be ugly. I just didn't expect it to be like shooting below 20% from three ugly for United. But come to think of it, you know, it kind of makes sense now, right? And I should be claiming it. I claim this all year, as I said to you earlier. I go, Melbourne United, no chance to win the title, right? In our DMs.
Absolutely no. You definitely called it for sure. You knew exactly what you're doing with United. And, you know, I knew their defense and everything would hold up, but it's more just the offensive end that was more the major disappointment, as you alluded to with their lineups. And I still thought they'd have it figured out come playoffs. It's Dean Vickerman. He's got a great system. And they couldn't get it figured out against Tasmania and simply got exposed for it. So tough way to end for them. But it's always set up to be a low-scoring series with these guys. It's something I took with the Jack Jumpers all year and something I'll touch on when we talk about the grand final series with the Jack Jumpers going against Sydney. It's just they can play good for a quarter or two, but I just don't see how they can score at a high level for four quarters of a full game. And the Jack Jumpers just can't do that.
Were there any other markets you played during this series? Did you play money line or handicap line or even quarters or halves, etc.?
Only on the third game. So the first two games, I was strictly on the unders. Mm-hmm. And the third game, I had Melbourne United money line in a couple parlays, but I actually had a little chunk as well on Jack Jumpers plus 7.5. I figured it would be a little bit closer. I wasn't sure they'd cover for sure, but I definitely thought United would win, but I didn't think it'd be a blowout. I think everyone was looking at the first matchup in United, seeing that it was a blowout and overreacting a little bit. 7.5 was a lot of points to give in a third game that's a closeout game like that.
Yeah, especially when both teams aren't. You know, when it was going to be a low-paced game, I just didn't see it. I agree with you. I got lucky. It was, so I thought United would get around their total mark. I go, you know, I'll play it safe. I'll play the Tasmania under, right? And then Tasmania go on to win the game. It's classic. But yeah, I think it's funny. There was also another thing that I found very interesting was Andrew Gaze, during the coverage, essentially said that Chris Golding was coming off injury over the weekend. They'd kind of known it already, as opposed to it occurring in warm-ups, right? It's a gambler's worst nightmare, isn't it? Not knowing that the guy injured himself in the game before and then they claim in warm-ups when it's been a few days and there's money line bets everywhere, right?
Well, absolutely, especially when the game's at 3 a.m. your time and you're asleep when the news comes out. Definitely changes things quite a bit there. Bet was already placed, so I didn't have any choice in it in that matter, but yeah, I mean, would have been nice to know. I thought it was a little suspicious that, you know, he gets injured in warm-ups, you know, in a big game like that. What's going on there? I mean, they kind of needed him, but
I think they shifted it from getting injured in warm-ups to re-aggravating in warm-ups, right? But
right.
It's a weird, yeah, this is the thing. This is always in every sport around the world, right? You just, that you always fear. This is why the odds always, you know, like come probably like they come full circle and they hit the right accurate spot at the end because you can't, it's same as the NBA, right? Like you just got to wait till the last second to make sure all these guys are playing and are healthy.
Right. No, you see it a ton in the NBA for sure. There's guys ruled out last second left or right. But a lot of foreign leagues are just very hard to get that info on.
Yeah.
That's
the thing. NBL is a smaller league, but it's just, it's like shit. I felt for the Melbourne United money line bettors early in the process when they're like, yeah, Melbourne wins game three. And then Chris getting injured in warm-ups just before or re-aggravating in warm-ups, whichever way you see it. It's a tough spot to be in. But Sydney and Illawarra, speaking of, we're going from like a real dreary, you know, like arm wrestle in one series to like what was this, yeah, like it was a pretty wild and open series in Sydney and Illawarra. What did you think of it?
Yeah, so this was a series that I was looking a little more forward to watching than that Sydney series. I mean, just the offensive talents with these two teams is on another level, and they play very, very good defense too, don't get me wrong. But just the pace that Sydney plays at is what was going to interest me the most here in this one. And I was originally here in this one thinking, you know, how many points are they going to be able to get to, being that I love Illawarra's defense, but it's just Sydney's offense is just on a whole nother level. And that's kind of what you saw there in these games. I was able to play the under in their first game, which by a miracle went under thanks to the 9-point second quarter from Illawarra. So that was that was very nice from them. Pretty embarrassing, but nice for them. But just the Sydney offense, we'll go over it more too when they play, when we talk about them versus Tasmania. But their offense is just so hard to stop. It's just an incredible series to watch when you got Gorgeron and a defensive-minded Illawarra Hawks. And they have a ton of talent with them too, going against a team like Sydney. And I think this is one most people probably thought was going three games.
Mm-hmm.
But Sydney was just, they're just too good.
Yeah, we went from a series with no shot creators in United versus Tasmania, barring Josh Adams, I get it, right? To going to a series in Sydney and Illawarra where both teams have multiple.
Absolutely, yeah. And so United definitely could have used one or two there.
I think Ian Clark might have come in handy for Melbourne United as that additional scorer, right?
He would have been the perfect fit. He can shoot. He can create his own shot here and there. So he
would
have
been the guy. The guy's got balls too, man. When the game's on the line, he's ready.
Well, yeah, and that's the guys you need. You need a guy that you can trust to hit that last shot, especially at the end. You know, at the end of the game, you saw Josh Adams pump. You know, it's ridiculous three he hit, double clutching. But I mean, that's a guy you need. Someone that is going to hit those ridiculous shots, those clutch shots. And Sydney's got a lot of guys that can do it. And Tasmania has a guy that can do it, and United just didn't have a guy that could do it and ended up being the difference in the series. So
yeah,
this was just kind of what I expect, just a great series. Great watching Gorgeron get on the guys there and watch competitive teams. Illawarra was in these games for a while, but still ended up losing both by double digits just because Sydney's just, they're just too talented. First game was more blowout, but the second game was the one that was, you know, it's, you saw the strength of the Hawks, and you saw the defeat of the Hawks with how they just fell apart because Sydney's just too good. Sydney's going to dominate all four quarters. And if you can't play all four quarters, you're going to lose by double digits. And that's just what happened with the Hawks, is they were good for a half, good for a couple quarters, but not the whole game against them.
I thought Illawarra played really well, like especially in game two. Like we got Duop Reith hitting like step back triples in the fourth. You're like, man, this is going to be Illawarra's day, right? And then Sydney are like, nope. It's just like, oh shit. Like, and that death lineup, like you talk about the Warriors death lineup for you guys over in the States. This is the NBL's version, right? Where you've got Jalen Adams, Dejan Vasiljevic, and Ian Clark with Cooks and Martin. Like, that is just an insane lineup relative to all the other finals contenders, right?
Without doubt. And that's why it's such a tough matchup going against Sydney. I mean, you have best defender in the league, in my opinion, in Antonius Cleveland, and Jalen Adams scored 30 and 29. I mean, if he's not going to slow him down, who the hell is going to do it? And really, at the end of the day, it's just because you can't double him. Because if you give the ball to a Xavier Cooks who can play make, you give the ball to a Jarrell Martin one-on-one, or you kick out to the shooters and DJ or Ian Clark, I mean, you're in for a tough night. And that's why it makes it so difficult to guard him, is because you can't send two guys at Jalen Adams because you're going to get killed. And if you leave one guy on him, you're going to get killed. So it's a tough predicament to be in.
Right? The thing, what I will say on the weekend, what I found interesting was, and Gorgeron made his adjustments too. Like Gorgeron did a good job. Like in game one, Sydney tried to make Cleveland and Xavier Rathen-Mays beat him from the perimeter, right? And they're like, you know what? If Xavier Rathen-Mays wants to beat us hitting 17-foot jump shots, which don't get me wrong, he's good at, right? But it's not on the analytics, it's not a great play in basketball terms based on the data these days, right? I'm not a heavy data guy, but you know, like the analytics say, that's a tough shot to get 2 points, right? And the same as Cleveland. They're like, you know what? If Cleveland wants to hit those runners or Cleveland wants to hit those threes, that's fine. We'll live with that. But they took away Harvey and Jessup, and Harvey and Jessup sort of burned them in that last round. Sydney clearly didn't show all their cards, right, in that round. But I thought that was interesting. And Gorge came out in the next game and kind of made adjustments for that, made, you know, got Cleveland more involved in the ducking than the perimeter. You know, they had him ducking in more rather than being a perimeter rotation, etc. I thought Gorgian did a pretty good job making some of those adjustments. Also like the fact that Gorgian really shortened his rotations as well. Like in game two, I don't believe like he guys like Isaac White, etc. didn't even see the floor, right? Gorgian was just like, I'm going to go with my guys. And how good was that clip as well with, give me more, you know? It's just like, more. Like, screams in his butt. I was like, that's the ultimate, right? Yeah, I'm looking now. So the Illawarra bench, Rath and Mays played 22 minutes. Froling played 8 minutes. Conrad played 3 minutes. That's it.
Yeah, I mean.
And I think that's the way you got to play against the Kings, right? Because the Kings are just relentless. And to be honest, I didn't think the Kings bench were very good on the weekend. I thought they were pretty poor. And you can tell outside of the lineup of death, right, with, Swakala Bullock starts, but let's be real that Ian Clark is the closer and the main guy there. If you look outside of the death lineup, there was one field goal, which was McCool Maker. Right. I think that's where you can get Sydney is if they rotate too deep, right?
Right. Absolutely correct. And that's really their only vulnerable spot is their depth. I mean, if you can hang in there and keep it close when they got their starters in, you could be onto something. Guys like Angus Glover, major disappointment in the playoffs. Maker, is he going to be consistent enough? Probably not. Sean Bruce. I mean, these are guys that haven't been scoring consistently.
Sean's a mate of mine. Sean hasn't played the majority of the year, right? So it's hard for him to fit in. He's missed huge chunks of the season due to injury, right? So it's hard to get your legs back. He came back the week before finals, you know, and to come back into that intensity is as tough as it gets, right? So, and I hope for some improvement in the grand final series from Glover. I think part of it was like his background at the Hawks, being a Hawks kid essentially the whole way through, that maybe he was a bit emotionally, you know, like too charged or a bit overwhelmed by that aspect of it. And maybe he'll calm more against Tasmania. I think that might help. But I agree, like you got to get into benches to like make inroads on some of these teams. I think Illawarra did to a certain extent, but it just wasn't enough. I also didn't think they could handle Adams in the pick and roll at all.
Yeah, no, not at all. And that's partially why you didn't see a lot of Harry Froling is, I mean, they're just going to do pick and roll the whole time with Harry Froling because there's just no way he can keep up with that.
No.
And really, like you were saying, I know Angus Glover's shown during the season in certain games that he's been capable of making those shots and scoring.
Mm.
So they're going to need him in that grand final series. But Tasmania's game plan has got to be, you know, when those lineups are in, make Angus Glover, make Maker, make Sean Bruce, or if they give Vodanovic minutes, which I hope they don't, make him hit the shots because that's their best bet is making those guys beat him. Because if they let Jalen Adams and Cooks and DJ and these guys get, they're just going to, it's going to be a tough task for Tasmania. But 100%. Yeah, if Angus Glover can hit those shots, it'll be a quick series.
It'll be a really quick series, I think, if that's the case. To close up on Sydney and Illawarra, I actually thought it was a really fun series. I thought it was a great series. I thought it was really, really entertaining. I thought it was a great advertisement for the NBL, just the quality that was on display on the floor. And I thought both teams gave it their best shot. And if I'm the Illawarra Hawks, I'm not walking away from that game like shaking my head going, where did it, we stuffed this up, we stuffed that up. I thought they played near peak levels, just the Kings were too good. And to be honest, I think if Illawarra played if they played Tasmania or United, they would have won that series in the other one.
I agree. I'm with you there. I am impressed with Illawarra. It's definitely, they didn't lose the series because they played bad. It's just the Kings are just unbelievably loaded. I mean, Hawks shot the ball fine from three. They played really good ball. I mean, you had, like you said, Duop Reith was hitting step back threes, just crazy step back.
He's
a
baller too, man. Like,
he's incredible. He's
seriously good. Like, they had Harvey, so they essentially played with four imports with Froling, essentially, because Jessup is a, you know, a 23-year-old, 24-year-old next star. Like, they had four imports and Froling, and they still couldn't beat the Kings, you know. And that's not an argument against them. That's not me bagging them. Like, it just shows how good this Kings team is. And I actually owe the Kings team an apology here on the pod. I ripped the Kings team when they lost to Adelaide. I said they were arrogant. And then I said they burnt their chance to get the two seed. And I picked them to lose to Illawarra in that series. I own up. I picked them to lose because I just thought home court advantage. You know me, the whole time we've been speaking and know each other, I'm a big proponent of home court is that, you know, is a crucial factor in the NBL, especially in the playoffs. And I just thought Illawarra had enough talent with home court advantage that they could loom very, very dangerous for the Kings. And I picked them, I think I picked Illawarra in the upset in three. I was wrong. The Kings weren't arrogant. They knew they could win on whatever floor they wanted to. Fair enough. Like, hat tip to them. I got it wrong. And then also, I also want to say too, the other thing that you kind of knew that the Kings would win game two was the fact that Jarrell Martin did not play. Like, Jarrell Martin was great on the glass and great defensively in game one, but you could tell coming off COVID, he didn't have his legs quite there yet. His jumpers were short. Like, it's not that he played badly, but he wasn't Jarrell Martin. And you knew that wasn't going to be replicated in game two, right? You knew he'd come back in game two with a huge game. And of course he did. I think he's the most underrated player in the NBL just about. What are your thoughts?
I think he's definitely underrated and definitely one of the most skilled by far. He's very, very excellent footwork. And I've been more impressed with how consistently he's shooting the three ball. I mean, I watched it in the playoff game. I mean, man, he's so hard to guard if he can consistently hit those threes. I mean, it was incredible to watch. So I agree. I hope he still plans on staying in the NBL for a while, because if he's back next year, he should be the same thing. He should be dominating. And he should have quite the dominating series against Tasmania too, because he's a guy too. It's same with Jalen Adams. If the guy has a 14-point game or something, or a really bad game, I watch out next game, because you're not going to keep him down for a whole series. And that's what you're going to see with Jarrell Martin, is if he comes off a low-scoring game like that, he's way too talented of a player. Not to be scoring 20 points.
Yeah, so. The over on Jarrell Martin in game two was money, right? Like, that just was, it was easy pickings, that one, because you always knew that he was going to go, like, he was always going to have a big game in that scenario. The knock on Jarrell Martin last season were the rebounding numbers on him. But this year, like, you constantly see him in heading towards double figure. He averaged 8 this year, you know, and that's a big deal. Like, he had a really good, and he was great on the glass and great defensively, I thought, in that Illawarra series as well. Even when he wasn't, you know, 100% in game one, I thought, you know, he rebounded and protected the rim well, which has always been a bit of a knock on him. So congrats to the Kings. Well done. Like, you know, that was quite the performance, I thought, in the semifinals there. And we'll move on to the final, I guess, now. Breaking down all that, right? Like, oh, before we go there, how did you bet the Sydney and Illawarra series?
So I got very fortunate the first game. Only thing I had taken the under there.
Yep.
And then that second game, I actually went over with it. I knew how lucky I got with that first game. These offenses were way too good. So I actually had the over in that second game. So I was on a huge playoff streak. I still haven't lost yet a bet in the playoffs, other than, you know, I had the Melbourne United in some parlays.
Knocking on wood as we speak.
Exactly, knocking on wood. So I'm hoping to keep it going with Sydney and Tasmania. And I definitely already have a play in mind first game, but that's why I was impressive to see the step back, do up threes. I mean, both teams, Rattan Mays hit a couple threes. I mean, just
down the stretch, he came up huge.
He was incredible. That's what we mean. The Hawks didn't play bad. It's just Sydney's that good. I mean, they put up 99 on Brian Gorgeron. I mean, man, in a playoff series like that, a winner go home, it's like, you don't see that often against Gorgeron. And just incredible performance by Sydney's only way to put it.
Yeah, oh, that was the thing. Like, that's what I was thinking down the stretch. I go, people will be I'm thinking in my head, this is going to be the game where they go, oh my God, Illawarra won that game with Tyler Harvey out injured. Xavier Rathan Mays comes up. You had that feeling that it was going to be that, right? It was going to be the against all odds win at the end. And then, of course, Jalen Adams said otherwise, right? Like, talk about both teams clutch in that series. Like, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. We'll move on. Yeah, I didn't bet this series at all. I agree with you. The over in the second game was probably the way to play, because simply, you know, these are two offensively outstanding teams. And it's not though they're bad defensively. It's just they're both stacked lineups. It made sense. I thought Jarrell Martin over was the pick in game two. I didn't bet it myself just because I was a little bit worried that what if it was like, what if he just wasn't healthy yet? That was my only worry about that. So I left it. I left that series alone. But one series that I'm guessing you've already got a play ready for now, but I don't think too many people be leaving alone, is the Sydney-Tasmania series. How do we want? Let's talk about the basketball aspect of this first. Do you think the Tasmania game plan, in terms of managing pace, stinging on balls, doubling the post, can work against Sydney or not?
Well, I'd say it's worked so far, but against Sydney, I don't think so, no, because they can send athletic guys like Xavier Cooks or Jarrell Martin up to set the screens. You can't show on Jalen Adams. If you leave any of those two guys open, they both are capable of either going one-on-one or playmaking and passing out to one of the 100 shooters that Sydney has. I mean, you'll see Ian Clark and DJ probably quite a bit out there because they should be getting a ton of open looks all night long. And that's why this is going to be a tough, tough series for Tasmania. They're just not consistent enough offense. I don't think they're going to be able to score with Sydney, even with how good Tasmania's defense has been. I think this is where they're just a couple stars too short when you go against a team that's this talented in Sydney.
Yeah, no, I agree. Strategically, I remember when they were talking about after the Sydney win in Tasmania, where they could have won the game by 50, but I think they wound up winning by about a bit over 20, maybe 30. And Buford said afterwards that the key against Tasmania is getting over the first wave of pressure on the on ball. So in other words, he's saying, like we were saying before, when they sting the on ball, it's a matter of getting the ball out and getting it out quick. So then you can create a numerical advantage. So it'll be 4-on-3. And the beauty for Sydney is that they don't have to even bother running guard the guard pickers there because, Xavier Cooks is such an elite playmaker off the dribble anyway and can find passes, right? Well, Melbourne didn't have that guy. Like Melbourne doesn't have a guy who can create off the dribble and, coming out of that situation, 4-on-3 numerical advantage. Xavier Cooks is perfect for that. He is absolutely perfect. And again, how do you play that, right? Because if you're surrounding that with Dejan Vasiljevic, Ian Clark, and Jarrell Martin, who do you help off of? What's the next rotation there? I don't get how it, and I just think the Kings can like absolutely annihilate them with that. And I think they're going to have to re-look at how they do guard the on ball, Tasmania. I think they're going to have to consider maybe not showing that hard, I think, against Adams. But then Adams, you don't want to give 30 to Adams either, right? So it's Sophie's choice out there really as to who you're guarding, right?
It's a nightmares matchup for sure. I mean, they've got, both Josh Adams and Majette, just a couple undersized guys that are going to be really having a tough time defending against the guys they're on in this setup. And there's no doubt that it's just not going to work. I hope I don't see it too much of them trying to blitz those screens, because if they let, Jarrell Martin or Cooks catch it in the middle, there's just way too many options. They're going to score every time. And that's the hard part here for Tasmania, is they can't just slow down and take away transition like they did against United, because Sydney actually has some sets that are just going to be unstoppable against a team that's so undersized too in Tasmania. I don't know what Scott Thrass is going to come up with. I'm interested to see, but he's going to have to figure something out, because there's far too many weapons to stop here on Sydney, and they don't have the size or the stars to do it. They needed 3-4 Antonius Clevelands out there might be doing it, and then you don't really have any offense. But I mean, I just don't know how they're going to stop it. And that's why I'll definitely have a play in the first game here.
Yeah. And another thing as well, I don't understand it's not just about the hard show and the rotations out of that either. They doubled all post catches against Joe Luala and then go, you know what, if you want to hit threes on us with Bubba, with Agata, with Jack White, etc., go for it. Like, how do they do that with Cooks, say Cooks versus McVay on the block? Like, who do you help off of in that lineup of death? Like, you can't really, can you?
Definitely not. And that's why it's going to be interesting to see. I really want Jarrell Martin, he should be able to take over, because if they're doubling him, there's going to be a lot of open shots. And if they can't double him, he should be able to really dominate this series.
Yeah.
And it's going to be, you know, real interesting to see what they end up doing with that, because he should be able to take over this series in the paint. And if they're doubling him, they're going to get plenty of open shots to DJ and Ian Clark and those guys. And there's just not enough Tasmania can do. Who are you going to trust one-on-one with Jarrell Martin or Xavier Cooks? I know McVay's a good defender, but, you know, I'll take my chances having Cooks post up every single time, and he'll be scoring a high percentage of those shots on him.
Yeah, correct. And I just look at that with Jarrell Martin as well, and I go, well, Fabian Krzyzlewicz just can't guard him. And Jarrell Martin, unlike JLA, is much better at, like as you say, he's got better footwork. He is able to see lanes better, passing lanes better. He can, you know, he is a better decision maker coming out of the block than JLA. JLA's got some height on him, which is an advantage, right? But, you know, Jarrell can find those things. I think he is a huge factor there. I think the guys, if I'm looking for a path to victory for Tasmania here, it's that you employ this strategy while, you know, like, and you help off of Swaka Labulik. For example, if Swaka Labulik starts against Adams, right? And there against Josh Adams, I'm referring to there. Or alternatively, if they're posting Jarrell Martin up and then Cooks is on the perimeter, you help off Cooks, right? But I just feel like Buford will come up for an answer with that, where they'll have Cooks on the duck in if they send the double off him. And he's able to catch on the run, take a couple of dribbles and finish at the rim. Like, he still can create off the dribble. So I don't think that's really works either. But I think the Swaka Labulik, McCool Maker, Bruce Glover, they've just got to – that's how Tasmania – it's the only way Tasmania can compete on that defensive end is by helping off those guys and going, you know what, if they beat me, they beat me. But against that lineup where they go with Adams, Clark, Vasiljevic, Martin, Cooks, I just don't see it, right?
Couldn't agree more. It's when the death lineup's in, it's going to be so, so tough for Tasmania. And they're going to really have to just do everything they can offensively to stay in the game, because they're going to have to take advantage when one or two of those guys are out. When the Angus Glovers are playing, you know, Bruce, McKermaker, I mean, those are the guys that they have to make take all the shots on offense. And it's hard to just say leave them open, but it could come to the point where it's better to force those guys into making some open shots than letting the other guys kill you. So
that's what they did to Melbourne. They left Jack White wide open. They left Bubba wide open. They left Agata wide open. They're like, you know what? That's better than the alternative of JLA beating us. I think that's the approach that you got to go with. But again, like, if you're losing by the time the death lineup comes in late in the game, you're finished. Right?
Exactly. And I think we're going to see some heavy minutes from that death lineup, because it's the final series. You're going to see them using their best lineup in there, and that's the one that's really going to be tough for Tasmania to stop. So they're going to have to deal with the death lineup most of the game, and they're going to have to try to weather the storm and hope that they're still in it by the time that the subs come in, or else it's just going to be an ugly series.
And they've got to hope, like, you know, there's this series, there's a lot of talk on Twitter about the, you know, the Scott Foster-esque scenario that is after Buford and Buford's war with the referees, whatever, at the end of the season. You know, maybe you got to hope for some hometown calls in game two and game four to get you some extra points to bridge that, you know, that talent gap between the two teams and what will exist there. I can't really see Tasmania, unless Tasmania are allowed to, like, just grab and hold and push. I just don't know how they can defend the Kings enough to keep them. Because let's be honest, like, Tasmania aren't a team that's going to put 100 on you, right? So they're probably going to have to keep the Kings at the 80 mark to stand a chance, right?
Pretty much. And that's a very tall task. But the problem is, you keep them in the 80s, that means you got to be in the 80s. And Tasmania hasn't done that once. Against United, they didn't do it in the playoffs. No. I mean, in the playoffs, not in the season.
Yeah.
But that, and, you know, not only are they going to have to try to hold them down, but quite simply, they're going to have to score the ball better than they have most of the season. I mean, there's no other way to put it. You're going to have to be very high percentage shots on offense to beat Sydney. You're only going to hold them down to so much. So it's going to come down to if Tasmania is able to make those shots and shoot the high percentage, because that's really the only way they're going to stay in it. You can play great defense. You're not going to hold them under 80 most likely. So you're going to have to score the basketball. And that's my biggest concern with Tasmania, is that they've shown they can do it for a quarter or two, but can they do it against for four quarters against Sydney? I just don't think they're going to be able to. And that's really the only way they have a shot in the series, is being able to score.
Mm. I had a friend who's a former coach message me this morning, and he said to me, Carl, on Tasmania, is there one player that starts for the Kings?
Man, that is an excellent question. I mean, best player Josh Adams is not starting over.
Yeah. Jalen, you're starting Adams, him over, so. Ian Clark or Vasiljevic? That's the question. Not for what the Kings need, right?
That's just it. It's not really for the Kings need. I mean, if you said MBZ a better player than them, I mean, I think so, but
I don't think. Yeah, I think Clark's better than him, but I do think, like, he's probably more. He has more strings to the bow than Vasiljevic, but Vasiljevic is a lights out shooter, right? He fits the Kings exactly what they need.
Right, and that's what makes it tough there. I mean, but if you flip-flop a DJ Vasiljevic with Adams, Tasmania's not as good. So yeah, it's correct. Just different fits. You know, exactly. Josh Adams just fits way better with Tasmania, whereas if you try to say, would any of those guys start for Sydney? Not really, because it just wouldn't be a good fit. They need guys like Ian Clark.
But he's the only one. All the other guys aren't even talented enough to start. No, like, they wouldn't start on anyway for the Kings, right?
Definitely not. No, there's nobody else. Not knocking the Jack Jumpers, but I mean, just look at Sydney's lineup. I mean, no.
I know what you can say that about most of the teams in the league, right? I'm not saying otherwise, but it is a funny discussion. I think the other really interesting thing about this series is the fact that the Kings have elite defenders at the positions where the Jack Jumpers are best as well. So McVay's been great. Right? Oh, have fun. Enjoy Xavier Cooks, you know, arguably who should have been defensive player of the year, right? Enjoy that matchup and that length going against you when you're trying to pull mid-range jumpers off, right? And then you go, okay, cool. Majette, enjoy Jalen Adams, another guy who's up and in and has hands everywhere and is lightning quick. And then, oh yeah, Josh Adams, enjoy Swakala Bullock and Ian Clark.
And that's where it gets tough. These are defenders that are stronger, quicker. I mean, they have more length. And they're going to be smothering Josh Adams and Majette all game. And that's the problem I have with Tasmania, is maybe one quarter they're going to score 20. But against those guys, you're going to get tired. Those guys are such good defenders. I don't see how they do it for four quarters. It's just such a tough task. Those guys are definitely going to get way into those guys. And I mean, listen, you hold Josh Adams down, the rest of the squad's not going to score enough to be in the game. So I think that's what their key is to shut down Josh Adams and see if Majette and these other guys are going to be consistent scoring for a full game. And I don't think they will.
Because this is the thing, right? It's like, how do the Jack Jumpers get to 80? And if you look at it, so there's Matt Kenyon, Jack McVay. You got to hope for mid-teens to 20 from McVay, which it's going to be tough against Cooks, right?
Absolutely.
Josh Adams, what I think you got to hope for 25, right? Krizlovic, I don't think we can expect double figures. Majette, maybe hope high teens. Hasn't really done it though, has he? And then you got Weeks. You got to hope for Steindl, I guess, in the teens as well. Bairstow's not going to give you points. Then there's McDaniel and Mikal McIntosh.
It's such a tall task. That's what I mean. Clint Steindl stands out to me a lot. And then, you know, if there's any doubles on Josh Adams, you know, Steindl's a guy that they need to get hot, especially if he's hitting the threes. That's their chance to try to get into the 80s. But, I mean, Sydney knows that too. And I just don't see the other guys beating them. It's going to be a tall task getting to 80, even if Sydney plays fast. You know, Mikal McIntosh, Clint Steindl, these guys are going to need to be at least minimum 10s, at least 10 points each. Because
yeah, correct. And if that's the case, then Adams is still going to need 25 to 30, right? So you got to hope that one of McIntosh or Steindl wind up with 18 or something, the other with about 10. Then you got 15 from Majette and a bit over 20 from Adams. And you go, you know what, like, we might be able to compete here. But it's a lot of guys have to do very, very well. You know, too tall a task? I don't know. I think, speaking of that, everyone I've spoken to, everyone, I haven't heard one person that has said that the Kings won't sweep. Do you think the Kings will sweep?
That's interesting. You know, I think, or I really want to say yes. I would say maybe Tasmania gets one.
Yeah,
I'd be very, very shocked if Tasmania gets two games. If I was forced to bet on it, I would take Sydney to sweep. But, I mean, Tasmania may get one, but I just don't see it. Tasmania is so good in these underdog roles. I'll give them credit there. You can never count them out, but this is not Melbourne United. This is a much better team than Sydney Kings. I would take them to sweep if maybe Tasmania gets one game, but I would still lean more towards a sweep.
Yeah, see, I'd either go the sweep or I'd go five. I just think it's the home court thing. It always worries me in NBL playoffs. I'm falling victim to what I did in round one again. The home court, I'm going to go through. It's 3-0 or 3-1. I'm going to go 3-1. Forget it. Like, I just think Tasmania, there'll be energy in the building one game. It'll be like a old school WWF hardcore match, you know, where they're just allowed to do whatever the hell they want in Tasmania, where they'll kick, punch, scratch, you know, it'll be like Mankind against the Sydney Kings, you know, like it will be pretty ugly, I think, in one, and I think they get that win. But, you know, unless they're allowed to engage in that sort of play where they just get you really down in the mud, I just can't see it. But I'll go 3-1. I'll be generous. I'll do what I did last series and go, you know what, I'll give the Jack Jumpers a game at home, and then Sydney will close out in Tasmania, which will be a bit of an anticlimax, but you know, I think it'll be good though. And you're going 3-0, you think?
I'm going to stick with 3-0. I agree. Yep. The one in Tasmania is not going to be easy. You know, there's definitely no easy games, but that's going to be really a tough task. But the thing about Sydney is they're so good in the clutch time. I mean, when it comes to the last 2 minutes, there's no team in the league I trust more. And I just think they'll still be able to lock down Tasmania, even on the road. And, you know, Jalen Adams is a guy in the league that, you know, him and Bryce Cotton, those two guys taking the last shot, you're in good hands. So,
and they've got physical bodies as well that can handle the beatings. Like, Sydney are very strong and very athletic. Like, Jarrell Martin, Xavier Cooks, Jalen Adams for a guard, like, they can handle the contact as well. So I just don't know. And again, I think there'll be a narrative around this series too about the whole, like you see everywhere today, I look at the referee assignments, you know, they're announcing it and that. It's just like everyone kind of has this, you know, like to put in the American sort of analogy, it's the, you know, Scott Foster thing with Chris Paul, right? People, that'll be a narrative too. It'll be interesting to see how that plays out. But so the 3-0 is $2.60 here. So that's plus $1.60 for you. 3-1 is $3.25 here, which is plus $2.25. And then 3-2 is $4.50, which is plus $3.50, your side for the Kings. And I guess we're both taking the Kings, right? We just take the Kings money line at $1.25 or minus $400, you're speaking your American language.
Absolutely, yeah. And I already took them. I was minus 325 when I ended up taking them for the series, just to win the series outright. A lot of juice, but
they opened at minus 250 or so, $1.40 here. I was just like, huh? You know, when you know, right after the Melbourne game, I'm like, excuse me, what's going on here? And like, it was like one of those lines, you know, where you go, that's a fishy line. I'm not taking it, right? It's almost too good to be true, right?
I mean, that's what I thought when it was at minus 325. I couldn't believe it. I was like, I think this is should be a bigger discrepancy than just the minus 325. And that's why I took it. So 250 definitely would have had me questioning it, you know, a little more. I think I'm glad it's moved a little bit more this way, because it should be a pretty high discrepancy, because the talent level is a pretty good size difference between the teams. You know, it's really only injury pending that I think would change the series into something different. I had no problem laying the 325 with taking Sydney to win the series, because I think it's going to be a tough task for Tasmania to take him down.
Oh, 100. One of my friends has been pounding the Kings relentlessly since the second half of the season. Like, just every week, it's like a bank deposit he makes every week. Oh, another 500, another 500 every week. since the second half of the season, especially, and they were down in the odds too. Remember, they were like $7 and stuff. He's like, I can't get enough of this. Like, if you're looking at this roster, and then when Ian Clark was announced, it was like, he was just like over the moon. He's gone, I'm just going from bookie to bookie to bookie, putting money on. And he's, yeah, pretty excited about his Kings at the moment. And I'm like, are you hedging? He goes, nah, not, you know, not on your life, you know. It's the old, what's the old saying? You know, hedging's for gardeners, right?
You're absolutely right. Yeah, I wouldn't hedge if I was him. He's made some great bets. And at Sydney, started the season not too great. Jalen Adams was hurt. Anyone that sort of had any insight to how good that guy was, I'm sure we're very confident in placing those bets at that time, knowing as long as that guy's healthy, they're the best team in the league. And you saw it there, yeah. DJ coming back, Jalen Adams coming back. There's just too many weapons now, and they're firing on all cylinders.
Well, he was just of the opinion. He just goes, I didn't see anyone else with the personnel to beat them. And he goes, and Perth were a basket case. He goes, and Perth was the only personnel where he goes, oh, you still got to beat Cotton and Law. That's still a problem. But he goes, like, they're a mess. Like, they're not going to be there. And it's like, well, yeah, well played to him. And MVP odds. So we got Adams at, you know, Jalen Adams, that is, at $1.70. Cooks at $3.50. Martin at $9 and Josh Adams at $9. What are we liking there?
Hard not to say Jalen Adams. I mean, he's most definitely very heavy favorite for a reason there. But if I was looking to play something that had a little bit better odds, I would lean more towards, you know, Cooks is a solid option too, but possibly more towards Jarrell Martin, because I do think he's going to have a big impact on the series, yeah. Especially if he can dominate on the glass. I could easily see him going 20 and 10 or possibly much better. So, you know, if I was playing more for odds, I would go more towards Jarrell Martin there on that. Also because I think Sydney's going to win the series. So Jarrell Martin's one that stands out the most to me there.
Yeah, I agree with you. That was when I opened it up. Like, I wouldn't bet this market personally. I just don't love, you know, what worries me about it is like, they could do the stinging the on-ball again because they just might be so scared about Jalen Adams that they're just like, you know what, we'll make everyone else beat you. And then you get beaten by the fact that they've just taken a ball out of Jalen Adams' hands. And, you know, Jarrell Martin and Xavier Cooks are both excellent players, right? And they're MVP caliber. They can win finals MVP quite easily. So I was like, yeah. Not sure. I agree with you. If I was going to play it, I would take the Jarrell Martin or the Xavier Cooks approach there, just because I think that they're going to try and take away Adams as much as they possibly can. I just think that, and then Jarrell Martin, like Jarrell Martin's numbers can be huge. What I liked more though, I kind of like Adam. The only reason it is largely a narrative driven award, just like the NBA, NBA MVP. I do think the league wouldn't mind seeing Jalen Adams back in the NBL next year. So maybe they might like him to win an MVP award, right? Series most points was actually the one that I liked for Jarrell Martin, actually, because Jalen Adams is $1.30. Josh Adams is $6. Jarrell Martin is a nice $8 there. And I thought, like, Jarrell Martin can have three games where he scores over 20 and Jalen Adams can have a quiet one and then you win that.
Absolutely, especially if Jarrell Martin's hitting the threes too. It's extra bonus. But along the same narrative, if they are going to take the ball out of Jalen Adams' hands, that's huge for that, because that would open up a ton of opportunities for Jarrell Martin and what would give him a chance to win that. Obviously, it's easy to say that Jalen Adams take him there, because rightfully so. But, you know, for the odds, it's better to move to a guy like Jarrell Martin, who still could steal that and get the most points there, just based on how Tasmania decides to defend Jalen Adams. So
that was one that I liked in this series. Just Josh Adams is a bit of a wild card at the $6 there in the points, but I prefer Jarrell Martin in the points market than in the finals MVP market, just because the guy is a flat out scorer. And my worry is that Cooks eats into the rebounds, Cooks eats into the defensive plays, and, you know, like, Cooks could well and truly be finals MVP. I preferred, like, Jarrell Martin as a scorer.
I agree, and you'll get Cooks making, you know, some more plays, especially if they have him set in a lot of screens. He'll be getting assists, rebounds, points. He'll be doing it all, block shots. So that's what makes it tough, you know, between him and Jarrell Martin in terms of MVP, but scoring no doubt should be there for Jarrell Martin. I'm not a big fan of the scoring choice with going Josh Adams, just because I think Sidney's really going to double and do everything to get it out of Josh Adams' hands. They're going to make someone else beat him. So, you know, even with him touching the ball a lot, I think it's going to be hard for him to score as much, considering I think Jarrell Martin's going to be getting a lot better opportunities, a lot more open shots, one-on-one opportunities with not very good defenders. So, you know, especially for the odds, it's definitely a solid bet going Jarrell Martin points. The MVP, like you said, it could be tough just because Xavier Cooks does so much on all levels, all stat lines. So points is a great way to go with Jarrell Martin, and you're getting pretty good odds with it.
Yeah, I'd rather take the points than the MVP, I think, just because, as we said, like you know, Cooks is a threat, I think, in the MVP market as well. While here, it's really Jalen Adams or Martin, unless you think Josh Adams, they're just Kings are going to give him 30 a game and go, hey, everyone else isn't going to do anything, though. But I think they're more likely to take him away.
I agree. And I mean, Jalen Adams, he can get rebounds. He gets a ton of assists, too. So he could still win MVP, but not be scoring all the points, especially if they're doubling him. Could it be Jarrell Martin getting those points? So, I mean, you could see Jalen Adams MVP, but Jarrell Martin scored the most points very easily. So, I mean, if you're going to take it for the odds, I still like Jarrell Martin. Like we've mentioned, I think we both agree he's set up for success in the series. If he can go out and take it, he should be getting some good looks.
Yeah, I think that's the way to play that series. I think it's going to be, I don't know, it's going to be an interesting one. I think it's going to be more interesting than what people, you know, made it out to be. Most people think it's going to be, as I said, I haven't found anyone that doesn't think it's 3-0, right? So if you're out there and you don't think it is, hit up the Best Than Greenway podcast, because, as I said, everyone I've spoken to is 3-0. And these same people, though, were saying that it would happen to Melbourne United too. Melbourne would maybe win a game. So there's a lot of love for the Sydney Kings.
Yeah, and there's definitely a lot to love looking at that lineup. So definitely makes it hard to give Tasmania getting two games, you know, maybe one, but it's just going to come down to how do they stop that Sydney lineup, and it's tough. But hey, you know, no one thought the Jack Jumpers would make it this far, so you really can't rule them out anymore. They're too good in the underdog role, so they could definitely shut us all up very easily if they pull this off, but some tasks are a bit too tall, in my opinion, and I just don't think they'll be able to do it.
No, so your keys, I mean, we've essentially spelled it out for the Kings, right? But your keys for victory for the Kings and then for Tasmania?
For the Kings, I think it's really important to take away Josh Adams. You got to make guys like Majette beat you, like Jack McVay, make Clint Steindl make the shots. So my key would be, you know, to take away that on the defensive end. Don't let Josh Adams beat you. But offensively, it's really, I think they should try pounding the paint, force doubles to spread out to the shooters. And if there's no doubles, Xavier Cooks and Jarrell Martin should really have an easy time in there. So I hope to see Sidney pounding the paint in there and giving Jarrell and Xavier Cooks a lot of touches, because they should be able to get a ton of good looks off those actions. Yep. For Jack Jumpers, it's really, like we mentioned, they've got to take advantage of when the death lineup is out, because the death lineup is so hard to manage. And if they can just keep it somewhat close when that death lineup's in, they have a chance in these games. You know, force Angus Glover, force Sean Bruce, you know, force McKerr-Maker, force these guys to make shots like they did with United, leaving guys open. I think that's their best bet is, you know, if they can score enough offensively and stay consistent, they got to take advantage whenever Jalen Adams is on the bench, Jarrell Martin, any of those guys sit. They got to go on spurts during those times to stay in these games.
Mm-hmm. Now, I'm in agreement with you largely there. My point of view on it is, for keys to victory for the Kings is to get the ball out early and easily against the Tasmania when they sting the or blitz the on ball. I think if you get the ball out quick and you create 4-on-3 advantages, it's so deadly, especially with Xavier Cooks there. In terms of how you can also handle that, if you're Tas, it's going to be interesting, right? So if you send McVay up, you can try and, you know, if it's Krizlovich going up, for example, because they think Adams can take advantage of Krizlovich on the sting, then I think Tasmania, you know, this is sort of talking how Tasmania can win, but I'll go with anyways, that you switch the picker. So then you switch McVay and Krizlovich to send McVay up to guard the on ball. So that would be the first thing. Also for the Sydney Kings is I think they need to play the death lineup as much as possible. I think they need to shorten their rotations. I do think there are some holes to be had in this team if they start going too deep into the bench and relying on role players, because then Tasmania can get into the same sort of game plan that they did against United and making the bench role players from the Sydney Kings beat them, which I think can cause some issues for the Kings. I agree with you regarding Josh Adams, but I actually sort of also think that, you know what, I would kind of let Josh Adams, I'd kind of let that, I'd let Swakala Bullock and I would let Ian Clark go one-on-one with Josh Adams. I don't fear Josh Adams that much to, like, they have to, the other guys have to be wide open to score. Like, I trust those two guys as defenders one-on-one against Adams. They did the job against Harvey relatively well, granted with a bit of a show there. I think they can both do the job against Adams and then go, you know what, like, then you can guard the Steindls, then you can guard the Majets, etc. And if those guys aren't getting off, like if Adams wants to beat you by himself, let him go for it, at least in one game, I think. Because I just don't think he's not a Jalen Adams, he's not a Tyler Harvey, etc. I don't fear him like I fear them. I'm not that scared of him. I also think that the Kings also need to, again, you know, Martin and Cook's a pretty good passing out of doubles. It'll be interesting to see if Tasmania double on the low block. And if they don't, they've got to take advantage of it. Main thing for the Kings, push the pace, push the pace, push the pace. Because if you can get Tasmania sped up and you can get more possessions in this game, the more, when you have more possessions, talent wins and the Kings have the talent, right? So my key 2 points are push pace and reduce, try to go to the Gorgian model of bench rotations where your bench essentially isn't playing and it's just Swakala Bullock and Ian Clark rotating in notes. So Swakala Bullock, Vasiljevic and Clark rotating for the one, you know, the two spots, and then having Maker, Cooks and Martin rotate for that other spot in the big spot. Like you have two of those three on all the time and you have two of the other three on all the time and then you're covered, right? I don't think you delve too much more into that. You can get Adams some quick rest with Bruce, but also I think you can also find time to have Ian Clark in at the point, and Glover you can find some minutes for, but if Glover's, you know, like it's one of those things, if these guys are on, they're on, leave them in, but if they're not, then you got to shorten it up real, you got to have a short leash, I think. That would be all my advice for the Kings. In terms of the Jack Jumpers, you know, it's a tall task here. I think I wouldn't, you know, I think that you kind of, the stinging the on ball is crucial, but like it depends where it is. I wouldn't go stinging it too high up because if you get Cooks going downhill, then it's a major problem. I'd probably just about rather live with Adams coming off that. You know, you can kind of go, if it's really, really high on ball, go under and dare him a little bit. But if it's close to the 3-point line, I would definitely be stinging it. In terms of post ups, you know, I wouldn't. Again, if the death lineup's not in, I send the double that is the role player. I send doubles off of the role player as soon as Martin or Cooks put the ball to the floor in the low block, not before it. Because they'll be able to pick you apart when if they haven't used their dribble yet, and they'll be able to see the whole floor. So you have to wait till the ball's put to the floor, then double, and you double off Swakala Bullock, Glover, Bruce, etc. You do not double off TJ Vasiljevic. You do not double off Ian Clark. And you do not double off Jalen Adams. That would be my advice. And Tasmania is just slow the game down as much as possible. Make it ugly as possible. And this is going to sound really harsh, but you know, you got to hope you foul a lot and you hope that you set the precedent by fouling a lot. That's what's accepted. And that the refs give you some home cooking as well. I think that's the only way they can get through, you know, to be competitive in this series. Fair?
I couldn't agree more. It's pretty much the only fair way that I think to look at it is they're going to have to really try to force Sydney to play Tasmania's way, try to muck it up, be very aggressive. They're going to definitely have to get up into Sydney, play very aggressive, and hope that the refs aren't, you know, don't have a loose whistle and are letting them get away with a little bit of it, because it's most likely how they're going to stay in these games. You know, unless they're shooting lights out, which I just don't know if you can do against a very talented defense in Sydney. They're going to have to just get aggressive on defense and hope the refs let them play. It's grand finals. Hopefully the refs will let them get a little more aggressive and play some good basketball.
Yep. And if the Jack Jumpers do that, it'll be interesting to see how the Kings respond. If the Kings play physical, what will the whistle be like? You know, what will the whistle be like on both ends? It's going to be very, very interesting, I think. Well, that's it, mate. Have you got any other thoughts before I wind things up and give everyone your details, how to find you, of course?
Of course, yeah. No, it's always great to join the podcast. I just wanted to give out to end it a free pick in the first game. Yep. We're going Sydney. It was -7. Looks like it's up to -8 now. I'm going Sydney -8. I do think they should be able to take it care of Tasmania very easily, especially at home. So anyone that feels free to tail along wants to bet, is I am laying the 8 with Sydney in game one there.
Yeah, good pick. Home team game one. Tasmania coming off a, you know, like a highly emotional Monday night win. Can't help but feel there might be a bit of an emotional letdown. There was one thing, there was also a basketball related thing I wanted to add as well. It's funny because I've actually received some DMs from Melbourne United supporters who are actually supporting the Kings in this series because they didn't love how the Tasmania fan base handled themselves, both when they were visiting Tasmania and then also here in Melbourne as well. So I thought that was a funny, interesting tidbit. And also saw that the Jack Jumpers were using a Sydney Kings code for access to tickets at Kudos Bank Arena as well. So it's a wild bunch down there in Tasmania. I don't know how to feel about it, but I don't really care either way. But it was kind of funny to see the there was a bit of outrage from Melbourne about our, you know, about the etiquette of the Tasmania Jack Jumpers. Hey, they're new to the scene, guys. They don't get it, right? That's what it's about. But no, it's, you know, capping it off there. It's, again, absolute pleasure to have you on. It's, you know, it's been another episode of the Best Than Greenway NBL podcast. Everyone knows how this works. Subscribe to the podcast, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, whatever podcasting app you use, and leave us a review. Preferably 5 stars would be optimal. If you don't feel like giving 5 stars, then maybe don't review at all. Maybe. But we'd most definitely appreciate 5 stars. And of course, DMs always open for sliding as well. Whatever NBL questions you have or if anything, even your thoughts, you know, whatever, always open. You can find Kim as well on Twitter with @KimJongUnPicks. You know, his account is called Kim's Picks, but you can find him @KimJongUnPicks. Is anywhere else, anything else I need to provide in terms of your details, Kim?
No, you hit it right on the spot. That's money. I'll be posting NBL plays for all these finals games, and similar to Carl there, if you guys have questions or want to show bet slips or have anything NBL related, my DMs are always open. Feel free to message me. Similar to Carl there, I'm always more than happy to talk to some NBL fans and go over games or breakdowns, this and that. So always feel free to DM me. My DMs are always open.
Yep. You can also find me on Twitter and on Instagram @CarlBeston. Again, always free to have a chat. What a week. We've got a grand final series coming up. I'll see what happens over the first weekend. I think I'll be back for a pod. It'll either be a pod. I think I'll probably do one after the series, or if it's a really contested series, I'll probably be back next week as well and probably do 2 sets. And there's going to be 1 or 2 pods remaining. But yeah, that's about it. That's the episode for this week. And it's been an absolute pleasure having you on again, Kim.
Always a pleasure, man. Always fun. Last comment. I just wanted to pour one out for Brian Gorgeron since he was stepping down. I forgot to mention it earlier, but legendary coach, obviously. But just on a little side note there.
No, he's a legend. We had him on the pod last season. I will endeavor to find the file. I believe Seb has the file on his computer somewhere. I will find the Brian Gorgeron file and replay it and repost it during the offseason. It was a great chat. Like, Brian's a great coach, but he's also a great guy. He was great with, I couldn't have, like, he was a great guest on the podcast. So, giving with his time and his thoughts, and it was very much appreciated. Just a real gentleman and great to deal with. And as I tweeted during the week, like he's one of the, I think he's probably the NBL's greatest personalities, and you can just see it by, you know, the referee interactions on the sideline. You can see it from that timeout on the weekend. I was going to play that timeout at the end of the pod in celebration of Ryan Gorgian. I might do that anyway. But yeah, it's been a hell of a ride for Brian. I hope he comes back to a team next year. You know, you never say never, right? You never say never. I hope he comes back to the NBL, whether it be next season or whether it be in the future. The sport and the NBL is so much richer for having him in it. And I think the NBL as a whole is pretty lucky with some of the elite coaches we have, that they're very eloquent, very entertaining guys, and they're really, really interesting people, and not a lot of sports have that. So yeah, definitely pour one out for Brian Gorgian. It's been a hell of a ride, and I hope he returns real soon. And in celebration of Brian Gorgian, I will play you his timeout from the first quarter on the weekend.
Great shot. No, I'm just saying, reverse, second sight. You're doing a terrible job now on the drop and protecting the fucking rim. Do your job. It's it. We're doing good here again. More! Fucking more! The pickup! Talk this! Don't be gentle on the switches! Be a motherfucker! Get that! Come on now!
What an absolute legend of the sport, and what a timeout. I'll see you all next week, guys. Enjoy game 1 and 2.